I want to continue the text. I know we've mentioned in our Bible class this particular text a couple times recently, and others as well. I want to talk to you about signs this morning. I want to continue the text here where Mike left off the reading, and that is that now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. The motivation behind my sermon this morning actually comes from our prayer and praise a couple of weeks ago. And I wanted to share, I shared this opening paragraph from a lectureship by Phil Robertson. And so that was the opening to the prayer and praise. And I wanted to kind of share this again with you this morning because I think it's just that powerful to consider. And I'm going to read from here because it's a little hard for me to see there, and this is cutting it off over here. So I'm going to read from my notes here. Notice the first couple of sentences. John saw more than anyone could ever imagine. For 3 years, he had a front row seat to the greatest show on earth. When I read that statement, I thought, wow. I mean, how true that. I never thought about it in those terms. But for 3 years, he's with the Lord, seeing the most incredible thing you could ever possibly see. You think crossing the Red Sea was awesome, but you got to see the Lord for 3 years and see all that he had done. Incredible. He walked with the Lord, listened to the Lord, watched the Lord, shared his feelings with the Lord, and was embraced by the Lord. Imagine that. He also witnessed Jesus' powerful touch on humanity through hundreds of miracles that defied the imagination. In an instant, water became delicious wine. The lame leaped for joy. The deaf heard the voices of loved ones. The mute shouted praise and appreciation. The demon-possessed were freed from chains of psychotic prisons. The dead awoke and walked out of their tombs. As Jesus did so many great things, yet John concluded his gospel with this statement here. In John chapter 21 and verse 25, now there are also many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that could be written. I have a small library. I like books. I would love to have a few more if it was all about the life of Jesus in terms of what is scripturally and what was done. Talk about signs for a moment. What's the purpose of a sign? Ever think about that? No, not me. I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm going to come to church. I'm going to be thinking about what the purpose of a sign. No, we don't think about it, but let's ask the question. What's the purpose of a sign? Well, I chose a couple of highway signs here. One of these, it was kind of funny, Jeff was even talking about Buc-ee's. I've never been to a Buc-ee's either. I hear that they're awesome to visit, but at the end of the day, I hear it's a convenience store. It sells gas, and it makes me think of a Quick Trip. Now, we've got Quick Trips around here that are kind of neat and kind of big and bright and sell a lot of stuff inside. But if you notice on here, if you're looking at this, what's the purpose of this? We call it a billboard, but what's the purpose of the sign? Now, let me ask you this question. Is the sign Coca-Cola? No. But what's the sign trying to say? You know, it's pointing to something else. So the sign's there, but it points to something else. Buc-ee's, exit now. Is the sign Buc-ee's? No. But if you exit now, you will be able to find a Buc-ee's. Growing up in the South, we didn't have Buc-ee's. I don't know how long they've been around. We had Stuc-ee's. Anybody remember Stuc-ee's? Of course, this is really back before the you know, interstates were kind of coming along when I was around. But I remember it's the major highways, you know, in 321 and what's the one coming out of, it doesn't matter, 231 coming out of Panama City where I grew up. You know, there was a Stuc-ee's at the state line. Like, they're always at the state line, you know. And I guess that was the precursor to Buc-ee's, if you would. But you'd see the sign, you know, that's coming up in a couple miles, and it's like, turn right here or exit here to get to the Stickies. And mom would keep going. It's like, no, the sign said this Stickies is here. It's like, well, we're not going there despite what the sign has to say. I want to talk about the signs in the Gospel of John. Now, there are 17 that are listed. No, we're not going to go through all 17, but 17 times the word sign or signs are listed. But I wanted to go through, and I picked a few of these because I want you to watch the response of the people in the first century to the very one who was doing these signs. In John chapter 12, 2 and verse 18, beginning here, Jesus had just, in his context, has just cleansed the temple for the first time. And the Jews had come to him after he had done this and just simply asked, what sign do you show us for doing these things? In other words, you acted, you've done something. What sign? What gives you, if you would, the right? What, you know, show us your credentials, if you would. What sign do you show for doing these things? He just gutted the temple, if you would. Later in the same chapter, in the first year of his ministry, keep in mind John's gospel goes very, very, very quickly. By the time you get to John chapter 12, he's really at the end and approaching his final night. So in John chapter 2, we're within the first year of his ministry, and it says that now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing. So there was a response of the people. Jesus was doing signs. He was doing something that he would take the signs and they would point to something greater, something bigger. And of course, he would point those signs or have those signs look at who he is, what he was teaching, what he has come to do. And that was the message behind the signs, pointing to something else. So the sign would occur, but it had a deeper meaning. It wasn't about the sign itself. Nicodemus in John chapter 3 and verse 2 says, this man came to Jesus by night and said to him, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher from God, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him. Now, interesting enough, Nicodemus, and he plays a very interesting role in throughout the Gospel of John, and you can read that and study that on your own in other verses and other places. But he comes, he kind of presents, you're a teacher, and that we know God's with you because you're doing things that nobody else does. Now, he hasn't made the link of what Jesus is teaching and who Jesus is yet. He just, you're a teacher from God. These signs, Nicodemus saying, show us something about you. John, and of course, at this moment, Nicodemus is not just there yet. In John 6, John 6 is the occasion where Jesus fed the 5,000. In John 6 and verse 14, and when people saw the sign that they had done, they said, this is indeed the prophet who has come to the world. Now, that would sound like they're getting closer but to who Jesus is, but not really. That there was an the wrong expectation of what was being taught in, you know, at the time of, you know, who the Christ is and what the Christ was going to do and who was going to precede the Christ. And there was just some, you know, wrong, false teaching by the leaders, if you would, the religious elite. But the people were recognizing something different about Jesus. And they attributed to him that he was indeed the prophet who was to come. This sign led them, you know, to that. Interesting enough, if you jump over to John chapter 6, and you look a little bit further, when they chase Jesus down, I believe it's on the next day, they find him moved along, if you would. Jesus kind of chastises them a little bit. In verse 26, in the same context, Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me, not because you saw signs, but you ate your fill of the loaves. So the sign was, of course, eating of the loaves, and the miraculous feeding of 5,000 plus individuals with such little food, if you would. And Jesus says, yeah, you saw the signs, but that's not your motivation. Your motivation is, I filled your belly. And that's not the purpose. And so he chides them, if you would, on that statement. Notice in, also in John chapter 7, verse 31, yet many of the people believed in him. They said, when the Christ appears, will he do more signs than this man has done? So you can see in John chapter 6, there's something's going on with the people. Of course, the ministry of Jesus is continuing. People are asking questions about who Jesus is, because they, like us, should ask questions. We should ask questions. Who is Jesus? And that's what the people were doing as he lived his life out in front of them. And he says here in John chapter 7, verse 31, when the Christ appears, will he do more signs? They saw this, but they're not necessarily making the entire connection yet. Notice also in John chapter 11 and verse 47, this is actually a very powerful context. In John chapter 11, if you recall, Jesus raises Lazarus, which of course is, if you would, the monumental sign in the Gospel of John, and I'll talk more about that in just a little bit. At least I hope I remember to do so. But in John chapter 11 and verse 47, we'll back up to verse 45. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we do? For this man performs many signs. I got an idea. How about believing him? Maybe that's the answer. There's the answer. Let's believe in him. Let's listen to what he's trying to say, and let's follow his teachings, because obviously he performs many signs. He's doing many things. Oh, by the way, just a little bit ago, I saw him raise a dead guy. So instead of asking the question, what are we to do? Let's go to him and let's start believing in what he has to say. But verse 48 says, if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take both our place and our nation. They didn't care. They didn't care about signs. What they wanted to do was do something with them so the nation wouldn't go off and follow him, and we would lose our place and position. It was all about power and politics. They wanted to stay in their role. They didn't care about salvation. They didn't care about sin. They didn't care about heaven and hell. They didn't care about serving God. And they had Jesus Christ right in front of them. How many of us, don't raise your hands, but how many of us would say, if we had the chance to live back then to see the Lord, we would do so? And I think all of us sitting here would say, yes, I would definitely do so. There's one more verse from John's Gospel. Not just one more verse in my sermon, but one more verse that contains signs. But I want to point this out to you. If you jump over to chapter 12 and verse 37, Jesus talked about, how he must be lifted up. And it's really, John chapter 12 is almost like the final public words of Jesus just before the chapter 13, the washing of the disciples' feet, and the night of the Passover, and ultimately the crucifixion. But there's a commentary by John, at the end of verse 36, when Jesus had said these things, he departed himself from them. Though he had done so many signs before them, they still did not believe. Notice the statement, so many signs. It's like, if you ever gone to a major tourist destination, I'm going to use Disney World because I was just there for a business event not too long ago, or at least close by. You would not believe, though you probably wouldn't, the number of signs on the road about Disney World as you get closer. And it's like almost in 6 miles and one tenth, 6 miles, 5 miles and one and nine tenths. You know, it's just on and on. You know, the closer you get, it's just more and more and more and more and more and more signs. And I really believe that it existed, even though I didn't get there. But all the signs, you know, turn here, and my hotel happened to be on near one of the properties or something. So I was real close to it. But all these signs pointed to it, and it's like, it's got to be there. You know how disappointed it would have been if I actually went further down, and it's like, oh, it's not here. Oh, no, no, no. Disney World, it'd be like me saying, all these signs are there, but it doesn't exist. And you'd look at me and say, no, you're crazy. All the billboards say it's there. It's like, no, doesn't exist. Well, did you not see it? No, I didn't even go look. They had a chance to see and look. Many signs, and they still didn't believe. Here's the sadness of that. Now, paraphrase the writer. Seeing doesn't lead to believing. Oh, I'll believe it. I see it. Well, they saw it, and they didn't believe it. True belief leads to seeking Jesus. Brother Brent Kirchville said this in one of his study notes on the Gospel of John. He said, this is another key teaching point that we've seen throughout the Gospel. Seeing is not how saving faith is received. Seeing is not necessary for faith. Crowds saw the miracles of Jesus and did not believe in him with the saving faith that God requires. So despite the fact they saw all these signs, experienced them, some of them ate of one of the signs, or two of the signs actually, not just the feeding of the 5,000, but the feeding of the 3,000. 4,000. Thank you. I knew it was somewhere there. I got it. Thank you. Thank you, Vince. They enjoyed that sign, but still didn't believe. How is this even possible? And Jesus spoke the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. And at the very end of that parable, he said to them, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced should someone rise from the dead. Now, study that parable very carefully and closely, like Brother Vance did for 26 lessons, 13 lessons. It's astounding. But in the parable, he says they wouldn't be convinced even if someone rises from the dead. And then not long after he speaks this parable, verse John chapter 12 occurs when a large crowd of Jews learned that Jesus was there. They came not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. So you see, the sign worked, many were believing, but also the sign didn't work because they wanted to go and kill Lazarus again, put him to death again. It's not just Jesus they got to get rid of, they got to get rid of Lazarus as well. That tells you their mindset. No matter how much Jesus did, they were not going to believe on the death, and while Jesus was on the cross, they came by wagging their heads. If he's the Son of God, let him come down, and we will believe in him? Really? No, you won't. All these other things Jesus did and you didn't believe, you're not going to believe if he came down from the cross. No way. And then, of course, you have this sad commentary in the Gospel of John, where it says, nevertheless, many even of the Pharisees believed in him, or authorities believed in him. But for fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the glory that comes more from men than the glory that comes from God. Yeah, some of them believed. but they didn't act on their belief. John says they didn't confess. That's an act. They didn't take that belief and take it to where it needed to go, and that is act on it, internalize it, and do something with it. They saw the signs to believe, but then, no, I like my place better. I wonder how much they're liking it now. Stop. That doesn't mean my sermon's over. Okay. But I want you to stop. I want you to think about this for a moment. Down here on Waxhaw Highway 75, as you're either heading into Monroe or as you're coming out of Monroe, at the silos there, forgot the name of the crossroads, there's been a lot of bad accidents over the years, many, many bad accidents. So they have implemented a four-way stop sign. Now, for those of us who have lived here a long time, that was getting used to. That was some getting used to. Of course, it wasn't long after that it was up, I'm slowing down, and the box truck rolls. I mean, just runs it like it's not even there. I've seen state troopers and county police not too far from it, sitting over there at the silos, just waiting for someone to roll the stop sign. If you would, and if you do so, you're going to get a nice ticket from our law enforcement, which you should, or if I did it, which I should. But here's the interesting thing about the stop sign. You know, the stop sign has no power to make you stop. You realize that, right? It can't control whether you stop or not. Now, it defines, there's laws and rules and regulations and responsibilities and insurance liability issues. If you don't stop, something tragic should happen. But the stop sign has no power in and of itself. It's what you do with what you see. It's the decision that you make. And that's the same exact thing they had to do in the first century when Jesus was performing all these signs. They saw the signs. It's what do you do with it? And as we saw with the Pharisees or the authorities, they didn't want to confess. They didn't want to act on it. Let's talk about some fishing advice from Jesus. Jesus, fishing. We're not going to look at the passages in Luke and John. However, I do want to bring them up for one. Early on in the life of Jesus, Jesus had the crowd was assembling on the beach. Peter and James and John had been fishing all night. They come in. Jesus says, "Hey, can I hop in your boat, push it out a little bit?" And he preaches for a while. And then he finally says to Peter, let down your nets. And Peter says, "We fished all night. We haven't caught anything. But because you said to do so, we will." They do. They begin to catch an enormous amount of fish that their boat begins to sink. And Peter's response at that point is that he falls down before Jesus. And he says that he is unworthy. And of course, Jesus goes on to say one of the most incredible things. From now on, you will be fishers of men. And Jesus is going to say, "Hey, we're going to change your occupation. This may have been your occupation, but you're going to have a new one. You're going to become fishers of men." In John chapter 21, the apostles are still, Jesus has been raised from the dead. It's in this period of time between the resurrection and the day of Pentecost, and Peter says, "I'm going fishing." Okay, so he goes fishing, and they fish. And then the morning comes, someone on the beach. "Have you caught anything?" "No, we haven't." "They're not that far off the beachhead." "No, we haven't." "Put your nets down on the right side." I mean, he didn't just say cast your nets again. He said, "Put them down on the right side, not the left. Put them down on the right side." They began to catch great fish. Didn't say that it began to overwhelm the boat or anything. John later tells us in verse 8, it was 153 great fish or whatever. It was a haul. Jesus knew how to fish. Peter sees this. He recognized, or John calls out, but It's Jesus. He jumps in, swims to the shore. And the next thing that we see in John's gospel is breakfast is being made. What was the point? Stop fishing. It's time for you to start fishing for men. I don't think Peter ever went fishing again. At least in the scriptures, I don't get that indication. But I think he does go fish for men, doesn't he? Acts chapter 2. But I want you to notice the different reaction of the religious elite. I want to jump over to Matthew chapter 16 for a moment, if you would. Matthew chapter 16. I want you to see this reaction of the leaders. In Matthew 16, beginning at verse 1, and the Pharisees and Sadducees came to test him, and they asked him to show them a sign from heaven. It's not like he hasn't done anything. He's already done a bunch. And he answered, when it is even, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red, and in the morning it will be stormy today, for the sky is red and threatening. You know how to interpret the present appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. He criticizes them. Oh, yeah, you can tell what's going on in the weather, but you can't see what's going on with the prophetic scriptures. Now, an evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign. No sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah. Very powerful. Sign of Jonah. I know someone who wrote a good article about the sign of Jonah. Preached a good lesson. You ought to read it. I can tell you where it's at. But the sign of Jonah. Very interesting. Go back and read Jonah. That's what he's saying. Go back and read Jonah. But yet we come back over to John's gospel back in John 11 and verse 47 and 48, which we've already read. So the chief priests and Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do, for this man performs many signs? Yeah, they wanted a sign. No, he wasn't going to just do one for them. He said, go back and read the book of Jonah. But he does many signs. And they didn't believe. A commentary, if you would, for the apostles during their lifetime. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear. What a commentary in the lifetime of the early disciples and the early apostles. Many people wanted to see what you were seeing, Peter, and John, James, and Andrew. Just go on and list the names, right? Blessed that you're able to see these things. Many people wanted to see them. And you're blessed for seeing them. In Matthew 13, verse 54, and coming to his hometown, he taught them in the synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother Mary, mother called Mary, and not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And are not all of his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things? And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own household. No matter what he did, some people just weren't going to accept. So that gets me to this closing verse that also looks like the opening verse. Very similar. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples. Signs. Many other signs. John's Gospel 7. 7. That's all John's Gospel records. Now, he'll allude to other signs and different things like that. He only records 7. But notice that John says, but he did many other signs. Well, but these, which are not written in this book, but these are written. These 7 signs in the Gospel of John is all we need. Because everything about Jesus is pointed in those 7 signs. So another lesson might be on what those are. But these 7, he says, that they're written down. And I love that. I am so glad that John wrote these. He talks about these. He wrote these down with the expectation that other people will come along who did not see. But I wrote these down so you can learn. And these are written so that you may believe. The whole point of the signs was to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. The people who lived during that time, they got to see it in live action. Some believed. Some didn't. But he says, these are written that you can believe, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. The very purpose of the signs, John says, is to lead us to eternal life through Jesus Christ. So when we have doubts, when we have challenges, when we feel like we're wavering on our faith and trying to think about our faith in Jesus, John says to do what? Go read. It'll strengthen you. It'll point you. And it will help you. Thank you.